Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you. Welcome.
Thank you very much
for being here.
Thank you, Stuart.
You know, last night you were speaking at the We the City event put on by the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University, mm-hmm. and you said something really interesting. You said that throughout your career, you saw yourself at this intersection between artist and social activist.
Mm-hmm.
What role does the arts, your ability to be an artist, help you in move forward social issues?
That's kind of a big question.
I know. I didn't warm up to it, did I?
No. The fact that I am an artist, I can't do anything about it, right? I'm not a bean counter, I'm not a basketball star, I was born an artist. I found out I was an artist when I was about 3. And I really believe that everybody is an artist, because if you take little kids to the beach, everybody is an artist. Parents are not smart enough to take it seriously, I think. So my plea to parents, to any parents, is to see what your kids are doing. Basically, they are playing, and I think that that's the blessing that human beings have, but that we don't really cash in on. You're supposed to play. You're not supposed to work all the time. Art is achieved by playfulness to me. I mean, some poor people, you know, they're 5 years old, and they show a little bit of talent, and their parents get all excited, and they make the kid start taking violin lessons and beating up on them to practice. That's not
it. No. Harder.
But, you know, if you fill the house with things like ukuleles, they don't cost much. A little cheap keyboard, pots and pans, children will make music. Right. If we tolerate it. If your kid is drawing with paints and pencils and crayons and stuff, for gosh sakes, get them a nice pad of paper. You know, honor that. Encourage that. Not so that the kid can grow up and be Picasso, but because it's good for mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And the core of what I see as needing fixing in the world really comes down to mental health.
But you use that voice that you had now developed and had to a expanding audience to speak up about things that you felt were important.
Yeah.
And that's where this intersection between art and social activism comes into play.
Yeah, it does.
And especially when it came to issues related to Indigenous people.
Especially, but not exclusively, yes.
Right.
I tend, if we just talk about social activism songs, some of my songs are specifically about one group. But the way that I try to write them, since I'm trying to give you something, mm-hmm. I'm not just trying to sing something about me and what I think. I'm trying to give people something that will help them to ripen from wherever they happen to be. And a lot of people might already know about Indigenous issues. And someone else might never have even considered it. So all the time, as a young singer who never thought that I would have a career, I could take a lot of chances. I could pretty much write what I wanted to write, because I wasn't taking it seriously. I was going to go to India. So,
have you gotten there yet?
No, I never have been. I never have been. It's not as though I was a terribly courageous person more than my peers. It was the 60s, and the 60s mm-hmm. were very much like now. In between, it was not like now.
Yeah.
But in the 60s, students ruled, and we were not going to go to your damn war, and we were going to change your damn government, your stupid administration that was trying to get us to do things that we didn't believe in. You know, students stood up on our, you know, we had discovered our brains.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I like to teach when I'm talking to Native American students of any age is that the Americas were different. Think of the things that we escaped. We didn't go through the Judeo-Christian horrors. We mm-hmm. didn't go through the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something that I would like to point out. Most people have never considered when it was that Indigenous people were discovered. It was during the Inquisition, but they don't point that out to you in school. It was during the Inquisition. And sometimes Aboriginal people...
They don't point out much about Aboriginal or Indigenous people's histories in the Americas. Yes. And isn't that what led you ultimately to the creation of the Cradleboard Project?
Well, the Cradleboard Teaching Project had an interesting little start. I was traveling around to, you know, not only to Western Canada, but, you know, Arizona and New Mexico and South Dakota, Montana and Indian country. And I noticed that Indian students coming out of high school, Native American kids didn't know how to negotiate the path to college. They didn't know how to get from graduation into college. Mm-hmm. They didn't know how to apply to a scholarship. So in show business and with First Nations people, what we lack is networking. Mm-hmm. That's all we lack. We have all the talent, all the brains. We can have straight A's, but if you don't know how to get in the front door, let alone get in the back door, let alone own the place, mm-hmm. then you're handicapped. It's real hard to get into show business. And I saw in the 60s that it was real hard for Aboriginal students to get into college. So I started the Nihiwan Foundation. And then it came time for my son to go to school. The Cradleboard Teaching Project came about because my son, when he was in grade 5, his teacher came to him and she said, I'm required by law to teach an Indian unit, and I know it's baloney. Her resources, she said, I know the stuff is. So we looked at what she had and we went to the library, and it was the same stupid, empty, shallow stuff that had been taught when I was a kid, mm-hmm. basically nothing. So I started to write a curriculum, not only about history, but about Aboriginal everything. So I found when I was writing this curriculum that no matter what I wrote, it all sounded like dead text about dead Indians. Mm-hmm. You'd look in the encyclopedias and everything, it's those same 9 pictures of the same 9 guys, and it's just, Aboriginal people have a problem in that we're in a time stereotype. Mm-hmm. I mean, people love it when we wear our feathers, right? And they kind of expect that, and they don't really have an education mm-hmm. about us, and very often neither do we, right?
Right.
So this time stereotype, I mean, what I wanted to give the kids in my son's class and his teacher for all the years she had going, I wanted to put her in touch with the same people that I would be with when I went to my cousin's reserve at Star Blanket. So it was the real early computer days. It was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. It was very hard. We had to do all the setup and everything. But then we had the kids. We connected the kids in Hawaii in my son's school, grade 5 school, with the grade 5 class at my cousin's school at Star Blanket Reserve in Saskatchewan. And everything came alive. Mm-hmm. And what we did was the Cradleboard Teaching Project was designed to put Aboriginal people from their own reserve in the driver's seat of delivering who they are to remote partners of the same age.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it really changed things. It was really lovely.
Got to get you to hang on for just one quick second while we take a fast commercial break.
Okay.
We'll be right back. Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program. Thank you. So what was the benefit to these young boys and girls as they were doing that? Did it help them to find their identity, to develop self-confidence and self-esteem?
Well, for the kids on the native side, yeah, it kind of did that, and it also put the teachers and the community mm-hmm. in the driver's seat of looking that up and deciding what it is that they want other people to know about themselves. Mm-hmm. And when I first was proposing this to Akwesasne, which is a reserve that straddles the U.S.-Canada border, they said, "Oh, there's 2 reasons we don't think we can participate. One, we don't know anything about the Apaches and the Navajos and the Crees and the Sotos, you know." No. You only deliver your own self-identity. You tell people about who you are.
Today.
Not who you are. Well, yeah. You can get into who, you know, history
your
and stuff.
Yeah, your lineage and whatnot.
Everything. No, everything. Yeah. What is your medicine? Tell us about your clan mothers. I mean, mm-hmm. that was their idea. We will tell you about our clan mothers. Mm-hmm. So each of the Aboriginal communities who participated, they designed what they were going to deliver to their partner school. Mm-hmm. And it was, of course, I mean, you already scoped out the benefit on the giving end. But on the receiving end, it was lovely, too. And we had the kids in Hawaii. I designed this multicultural form. A lot of kids in Hawaii, you know, if their four grandparents, one will be Tahitian, one will be Dutch, one will be Hawaiian, one will be Chinese or Filipino or Japanese or something. So it's really, really multicultural. I mean, you've never seen such beautiful high school graduation pictures in your life.
Yeah.
Oh, they're pretty. I had the kids have a sheet for each of the ethnicities from whom they come. And, say a Filipino one, you know. What are the favorite foods in a Filipino home?
Mm-hmm.
Who are your sports stars? Who are your movie stars? Play us some of your music. What are your holidays? We're not dictating. We're giving the kids an opportunity to explore and find out. And many times they didn't know. Neither did their teachers and neither do their parents. So it really was the Cradle Board Teaching Project partnering program as opposed to the curriculum.
Well, which goes back to your point about networking.
It does. It does. Yeah. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It's putting kids in touch with kids. We had the kids make self-identity videos if they wanted to. They didn't have to, mm-hmm. but they all wanted to.
So
and
you
so
were
a child.
You were promoting harmonious living.
And self-esteem.
Yeah.
That comes from the reality of what and where and who you come from.
Which are important components in building one's own life path, are they not?
And important components, I think, for mental health.
Yeah.
If young people can come to grips with, you know, some people say that everybody's ashamed of their relatives. But, if everybody knows that, yeah. it becomes humorous and it becomes fun and it can go away. You know, once you have a laugh about it, you realize that everybody is who we are. We're all doing the best we can. And in my opinion, we're all ripening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was not part of the project. That's another whole thought.
So I just, in the time that I have left here, I want to deal a little bit with the situation that we find ourselves in Canada right now. First Nations issues are finally present and in the mindset of many more people.
We recognize
that young men and women who are growing up, particularly if they're still in the reserves, are denied access to like the full suite of skills that they may need to be able to function in this interconnected world that we're in right now.
Yes, but it's not just on the reserve, it's in the urban areas as well, yes.
That's true, mm-hmm. Yeah. Like you go to North Winnipeg, for instance, and mm-hmm. you've got a community there that feels disconnected. If you could speak to parents, children, teachers in those communities, what's the number one thing that you want them
to... I speak to them all the time, and there is no number one thing. The number one thing is theirs.
Yeah.
The number one thing that I always have to keep in mind, it's their number one thing, it's not mine. I get all kinds of number one things. No, it's different in every area. We're not one little, two little, three little Indians. You know, we're all different. We do share in having been colonialized.
Yes.
I mean, we do. We do share in that. We share that with people in Norway, in Sweden, in Finland, in Australia, in New Zealand, in Africa. Wherever colonialism came, they ripped apart whatever was there. And some people will say, well, why is that still important today? And I got a real good answer for that. If you look at something called the Doctrine of Discovery, you'll see that the following countries, Holland, Portugal, Spain, Great Britain, and I left one out,
France.
Italy. You'll find that it's written into the law that, now this happened in the 1500s. Mm-hmm. During the Inquisition, there were several papal bulls, like think of a papal bulletin.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pronouncement, right? If explorers are out exploring and you come upon a land that's inhabited by non-Christians, you are to kill them, enslave them, or convert them.
Right.
That was the green light upon which all of these colonialized countries were built. And mm-hmm. it's written into the law.
I gotta ask you to hang on once again while we take another commercial break. We'll be right back.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program. Thank you.
Are you hopeful about the near future and the long-distance future for First Nations people in Canada and for Canada as a whole, for us to be able to live together where all of us have the opportunity to realize our full potential?
I am hopeful, yes. And I do think that Canada, like everything else on the planet, is always ripening. Mm-hmm. I think we are getting better. I think that there are times when the racketeers get into power. They get into power in the education system. They get into power in business. They get into power in the family. It's just, you always have to deal with Oscar the Grouch, or let's call him, I don't know, somebody the miser. You know, you always have to deal with a bully and a racketeer. Those guys are there all the time. In the 60s, we realized it and we did something about it. Maybe recently, with the recent election, we realized it and we did something about it. However, we cannot stop being vigilant mm-hmm. about the people who we elect. Pierre Elliott Trudeau was very nice to me, and he invited me, that command performance that I did for the Queen in Ottawa in the 70s. It was wonderful, and I'm really, really happy with the election. I think it's wonderful. But besides being happy with who got elected, in many cases, just across Canada, there were so many turnarounds. It gives me a lot of hope for, a positive future for Canada.
So one of the things that I think that we have to do collectively is tear down the walls that separate us. And this comes back to art a bit. Art helps us to do that, does it not?
I think art does everything.
Yes, I know you do.
I think
it plays a role
in
for me being able to reach across and say, oh, I can appreciate that. And now I want to know more about you.
Yeah, I think that it does. But also so does sports, so does food, culture, mm-hmm. as opposed to just, when Columbus's guy came down the gangplank?
Yeah.
I mean, who were they? Were they artists? No. They were children of the Inquisition who were oppressed from the top. And what were they drinking on those voyages? Was it orange juice? No. Was it what? No, we were attacked by alcoholic savages who were themselves oppressed by insane serial killers on the thrones of Europe. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the 1400s, 1500s. I mean, who was on the thrones of Europe? Ferdinand and Isabella, they were a nice pair. And who was on the throne in England? Henry VII and Henry VIII? Charming, that guy, Henry VIII, he didn't just kill, a few ladies, tens of thousands of people. Why? Because he could and because he did. Mm-hmm. Who was on the throne in Eastern Europe? Vlad the Impaler, that's Dracula, So I think people don't really understand what Indigenous people have had to deal with, but there's another side to it. What were white people in Europe dealing with for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before they ever got to us?
They were the recipients of that.
They were the recipients of bullying. Mm-hmm. They were the recipients of selfish actions of racketeers. And we always have to be vigilant about that because it's one of the things that we're trying to grow out of. It's a lot more serious than spilling your milk and wetting your pants, the things that have gone on in history. But I really don't believe that the suppression of my music in the U.S. didn't make me hate the U.S. government. And people are always trying to get me to say that it does. Don't you hate the U.S. government? No. No, because it was an administration, see? A lot of people are really, really mad at the Harper administration, right? But it doesn't make you hate Canada, or
right.
It shouldn't. It doesn't make me criticize the Canadian government. No, the Canadian government is us and whom we elect. But whoever you elect the best person in the world, you better keep an eye on the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's a greasy pipe, it's politics. There's a lot of compromises in politics.
When you
you've done is you've given the fox the keys to the chicken coop. So you better keep an eye on it. Don't just vote and go away. You got to follow up. Keep an eye on it and keep it cheerful. Keep it positive.
This is our last break. One quick one and we'll be right back. Thank you.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program. Thank you.
Well, you jumped about six centuries there, but Because I was thinking when you're talking about what goes went on 500 and 600 years ago, people will go, but that's the past, this is now. But there's a wonderful expression that was written by, and I can't remember his name, but he was an African-American professor in literature, and he had said, you may think you're done with the past, but the past isn't done with you. And
that's good.
This is where we are at right now. We're at this point where we still have to resolve the hurt, the violence, the pain of the past. But if we, as you say, continue to grow and heal, I think we can move forward to make a better Canada.
I think so too, and you made me think of something, circling back a little bit, but I think that what we need to do is embrace the past and accept it for what it is and move on into something that none of us have envisioned yet, but artists kind of do. Because an artist is not just an entertainer or somebody who makes decorations for the wall. You know, an artist is a visionary. We see things, you know, musical hallucinations, that sounds like it's sick, and for some people it might be, but there is such a thing as envisioning. Pattern recognition is so enhanced, I think, in myself and other artists who I know. In my travels, it's not just what I see, it's when I come back, it's the way that it all fits together.
Yeah.
And there's so much to be proud of in Aboriginal Canada, but so much that needs to be fixed. And
well, together, hopefully we can move forward.
I hope that we can. I think that we have to be able to look at ourselves for who we are. It's not a matter of Aboriginal people waking up and be smart enough to know that the white man is a trickster. No, that's an old kind of thinking. No, we have to all be able, we need to be able to grow into ourselves no matter who we are,
yes,
including Aboriginal people. And it might be more difficult for Aboriginal people because of our past. But I believe that if the doctrine of discovery were really understood by Aboriginal people and non-Aboriginal people, we would have a much better chance at putting an end to it. Because how many nice white people have I had, you know, professors, you know, not really good-hearted people, smart, and they say, how could my ancestors have done that?
Mm-hmm.
They had to. They were forced to. It was written into the law. They were supposed to. If you can't convert them, you enslave them. Slavery, or you kill them. But listen to this. We thought that we would never put an end to slavery. We thought women would never get the vote. We thought people would never stop smoking on airplanes. Of course we can do this. We just have to want to.
Thank you very much. Oh my gosh, you are an amazing force of nature.
Thank you.